What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Checkout. It's a podcast, and you know where to subscribe to them. All of our shows archived on our homepage at checkoutjazz.org, WBGO.org, for all kinds of amazing jazz content. I'm your host, Simon Rentner. Before we get into our conversation with Shabaka Hutchings and Theon Cross, I just want to let you guys know about another podcast that you should listen to called Jazz United. I serve as a producer, and our latest show, hosted by Greg Bryant and Nate Janin on Carla Bley, is definitely something you should check out if you're a fan of Carla Bley. You're listening to new music from Black to the Future, the Sons of Kemet, Let the Circle Be Unbroken. We get into a whole bunch of topics during the interview, talking about the music, of course, its trance-like features, and a little later in the show, the soulful, poignant message behind it. Stick with us, Theon Cross and Shabaka Hutchings next. Since 2016, the last time Shabaka Hutchings appeared on the show, The Checkout, we have in a front row seat, witnessing the steady rise of the saxophonist and composer. Quite frankly, his musical output has been staggering between his three separate vessels. Shabaka and the Ancestors, The Comet Is Coming, and his very first band, Sons of Kemet, which he formed 10 years ago. Happy anniversary to you, the 10th for Shabaka and Sons of Kemet. To celebrate, they have a new recording, Black to the Future. And I also want to welcome tuba extraordinaire player, composer, Theon Cross. Hey guys, welcome to the show. So glad to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks for having us.
So a little over a year ago, you said to NPR Music, Shabaka Hutchings, all situations have the potential to be tragic, or the potential to be tragic and transformative. Now we're a year later in this pandemic. Have you transformed?
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be strange if I hadn't transformed, if I told you, no, I'm actually the same person I was after a year of sitting, you know, with myself, discovering what it is to play for myself as opposed to an audience. I've definitely, I think, become more tuned into what I want to do artistically, and actually how that vision of myself changes over time.
What does that look like then? What's the new blueprint?
I mean, earlier in, you know, last year, it was actually sitting at home recording all these kind of wind instruments onto the recording that we had done. Which is something I've not done before, actually kind of experiment with overdubbing and adding layers of texture to, you know, a performance that we've done in the studio. You know, what it looks like now, you know, just specifically for me, is learning the MPC, you know, learning that technology and trying to actually humanize it, then taking the stems from the Sons of Kemet recordings and just working through them and finding creative ways of dealing with the stuff that's already recorded, whether that turns out to be another album or it turns out to be remixes, I don't know. I'm just kind of having fun and being creative at the moment with it.
Let's listen to some of those looping orchestral clarinets on Black to the Future. Thank you. did go to school and studied classical composition. So I suppose some of that training is paying off now when you're thinking about these arrangements. Like you said, these arrangements didn't appear on your previous Sons of Kemet recording.
Yeah, I mean, it was the classical clarinet course that I did. So it wasn't specifically composition, but I did do some composition modules with it. And I spent a lot of time in the library just analyzing all the stuff that I could when I was there. It didn't happen on the previous records, partly because there was just no time. You know, all the other records have been recorded while being on the road. So the general, you know, atmosphere was record into the studio, try to get as relaxed the recording environment as possible. And then it's a mixing process. Whereas at this time, there was just another element which was added, which was just raw time and space to consider what we've recorded and to imagine what needs to be added onto it.
So will you have an MPC when you're touring this music to hear all the parts? Will you be layering them in real time, or are you going to just be pressing a button?
For me, I think that the recording is always a very different thing from live. So I mean, the MPC is a part of a personal, you know, it's a personal journey of, you know, of like learning that technology, but I don't think I'm going to bring it into the live context yet. Like I'm learning a new instrument in that it's an everyday process that's gonna probably reach the audience just whenever it's ready, whether that's in a couple of months or a year or 2 years. But for now, like when we go back onto the road with Sons of Kemet, we are a band of four musicians, you know. And I'm old school in that sense, in that I like the idea of, regardless of what happens in the studio, when it comes to make music on the stage, we become just a band of musicians that are just playing our horns on the stage.
Dion Cross, you've probably been familiar with his other ensemble, Shabaka and the Ancestors, and The Common is Coming. A lot of those compositions that make it to the record are often found in the recording studio. With this band, are a lot of those compositions discovered the same way, or are there more lead sheets involved with something like this?
In this band in particular, because it's only two drums, sax and tuba, I'm actually really the only one who works on a lead sheet. And from there, I'll always take a creative liberty with it, rhythmically in particular. He writes in a way that I understand rhythmically, because he uses certain rhythms that you find in Afro-Caribbean music. And I think that's where my strength in this band has come through, is because I have that. My big offering, I'd say, is really grounding the rhythmic pulse of the music from the bass perspective.
Well, let's listen to you do just that. Pick up your burning cross. Here's Dion Cross, Shabaka Hutchings, Black to the Future. Ain't no end, just hell and rage. We'll be right back. Well, you are the burning cross, I imagine. A little double entendre there.
I'd like to think so.
Envision yourself levitating with a tuba. That must be pretty difficult, being a pretty heavy instrument. But I imagine you have felt sensations of levitating in this ensemble.
Yeah, I think in a live capacity is definitely where I felt myself levitating. I think performing with this band, we get into such hypnotic moments that you can feel yourself transcending what you're doing. So I can feel myself transcending just playing the tuba, and it almost becomes light. I transcend the physicality of what I'm doing.
Well, especially with the tuba, like the saxophone, it's very much tied to your breath. I can only imagine that, especially the power in which you use oxygen to play your instrument, gives more of that sensation. Does this music lend itself for you getting to a trancier state faster than other kinds of music?
Definitely. I think the tuba within this ensemble doesn't stop, and that requires a certain level of knowing where to breathe, how to breathe, and really mastering that breath. Breath is very important. It is life force. So I think within this band in particular, I have to map out how I'm doing that and be more conscious of the breathing aspect of my musicality than in other ensembles.
Do you remember a moment on stage where you were levitating? Where were you and what did that look like?
I think the show that stands out for me was when we played at Giles Peterson's Worldwide Festival. It was basically this massive crowd that overlooked the sea. I can just remember the audience and us all having the same energy. I felt like I was in the crowd and on stage at the same time, and the audience was almost, felt like they were playing. It just felt like a giant sense of oneness within the atmosphere. And I think that level of oneness that you can obtain with the audience is part of that feeling of levitation, as you described it. I think everyone coming together and creating a homogeneous energy that creates that feeling.
We thank Theon Cross for joining us, and he has an outstanding recording that you should know about called Fya, spelled F-Y-A-H. And you're hearing him right now with Shabaka Hutchings, recorded not at the Worldwide Festival, but actually by our sister program, Jazz Night in America. Their video team went to the Big Ears Festival in 2019 to capture this, and you can watch that full concert film. We'll link to it on our website. Check out jazz.org. The second part of the interview comes your way next. We talked a little bit about the music. Now, Shabaka Hutchings, by himself, brings us the message. If you wouldn't mind, could you read the sort of poem that you wrote for this album? I think people would appreciate it.
I've not actually read the poem to anyone, actually, like aloud. Field Negus, pick up your burning cross, think of home, hustle for the culture to never forget the source. In remembrance of those fallen, let the circle be unbroken. Envision yourself levitating throughout the madness. Stay strong, Black.
Where did this deep feeling that you wanted and needed your music to have a larger meaning than just entertaining folks, but essentially trying to change brain chemistries and maybe hearts and minds as well? Where did all of this come from and start for you?
I think it originates in seeing how historians contextualize music outside of the hands of musicians, because all music will come from a societal place. You know, all music comes out of a conceptual space, and all musicians make their music while thinking about, you know, larger ideas, whether they're thinking about them consciously or they're just living them. You know, all music is made with broader concepts, you know, that surround it. So for me, it's like, sometimes I'll read reviews or read historical depictions of music and think, yeah, but what, how is the musician themselves, how would they actually put these ideas forward if they were able to or felt emboldened to? So I think that if I've got the visibility and we're in an age where it's seen as okay for me to actually depict the albums in a way that I would want, then I'm going to do that, because, you know, it's going to be done either by the musician or by a non-musician.
I'm a field Negro now, exodusing from these wretched plains. Pour holy palm wine, wash away this wasted shame. Blood is thicker than cotton or sugar cane. I don't think you're ready for the pain. I don't think you're ready for the chain. Hey, you are a field Negro too, son. Lead Candace Owens by the plantation. Foolish us, thinking the overseer even had the keys to these chains. How could we expect the dungeon keeper to make the rules and play fair this game? Oh, bless your greed for not granting me the little I asked of you. I would have played a fiddle and tap dance for you. I would have settled for some skittles.
You say Black to the Future is a sonic poem for the invocation of power, remembrance, and healing. It envisions our progression towards a future in which indigenous knowledge and wisdom is centered in the realization of a harmonious balance between the human, natural, and spiritual world. I want to dig into just the idea of indigenous knowledge and what that concept means to you. And do you have any specific experiences of in that learning? Because that kind of stuff isn't taught in the schools, right? So you have to get that somewhere else.
It just comes from doing lots of research. So, you know, researching the San people from Southern Africa, or researching the learnings from ancient Kemet, or how they relate to the Yoruba religion, and, you know, seeing what is it, you know, like indigenous African cosmologies have to offer, you know, and really exploring it. The more I've explored it, the more I realize that there is a system of thought here that is very potent, but it's subtle. And it changes your outlook on what you're doing, you know, like, and how you're doing it within life and music. And, you know, I just thought, especially in the making of this album, that this is how I would like to orientate people in terms of how they see our music and how they see the direction, you know, we're trying to kind of push the music forward into.
These three bands that are different, obviously, in many ways, but there are some similarities as well. I see a spiritual through line between all three in a way. And the number three carries significant power in, you know, African histories and cosmology. Was it intentional that you would have these three vessels that would sort of carry this spiritual message that you are playing?
No, it wasn't, but I'm glad it wasn't, because it means that if it wasn't intentional, it was, you know, intuitive. I think if I had actually intended for there to just be three bands that I've done because of a deeper meaning, then maybe there would be a level of pretense, or maybe I would be stopping myself from possibilities, from formational possibilities, whereas the fact that I've acted intuitively in terms of what bands take prominence in my life, and it's ended up as three bands, means that it actually was meant to happen on a more wholesome, you know, cosmological design.
Now, if some of this research that you've done presumably has been field work to a certain degree, not just reading books. So I would be curious if you would be interested in sharing with our audience just some of these stories that you've been a part of in your learning experience.
Something that comes directly to mind is having a conversation with this 95-year-old bow player in Swaziland who played the mouthbow. And he's talking about his, you know, through a translator, he's talking about his compositional method and the fact that he receives most of his compositions in dreams. And he'll just wake up with a sense of a melody and he'll immediately write it down. And I just thought, that's so far out, because at that time, you know, I was really, I would try to compose. Like, composition was an active, you know, enterprise. It'd be like, you know, how do I get out this idea in this composition? But the idea that actually, you know, intentions can be percolating within dream worlds, and it's up to us to try to access that space within our waking life, even if that's, you know, remembering our dreams or trying to get into a dreamlike trance state when we're trying to compose. That's something that I definitely learned from that conversation with him and try to then apply to my, you know, compositional life.
Well, let's listen to some more of this Black to the Future for the culture.
For the culture, and he's talking about Dancehall Queen, it puts me back to my time in Barbados, you know.
Really?
When it was, yeah, it's like this was the vibe, you know, like that 90s dance hall music, where it was, you know, a celebration of the feminine form. It was just about, you know, having a great time in the community, partying. I thought that was a really important aspect of culture to document in the album. It's not supposed to be heavy in the way that we normally associate the political, you know, in inverted commas, with heaviness. It's supposed to be a depiction of the totality of the culture, you know, the fact that this form of exuberance and this joy in you know, having a great time is as much of a part of the culture as the kind of battle against oppression.
Did you dance a lot in Barbados? Did you go to a lot of those parties?
I went to a lot of parties, you know. I think that my dancing skills have actually increased over time, because, you know, when I was a teenager, I was kind of shy. I think my shyness has diminished over the years, having to be on stage all the time. So my dancing abilities have also, because, you know, I've always been really tall. So if you're tall in general and you're in a dance hall, and if you can't dance amazingly well at the beginning, you're just aware that you're sticking out. So I wasn't like the biggest dancer in the dance hall. I was just there listening to music. But now, you know, I think I've got a couple of moves, especially being able to practice in front of the mirror during the pandemic time.
Black is tired. Black would like to make a statement. Black is tired. Black's eyes are vacant. Black's arms are leaden. Black's tongue cannot taste shit. Black's stomach cannot compress death. And Black would like to state that Black is not a beast of myth, to be slain in a fable, recounted on top of a round table, surrounded by blue-collared brave men.
And also, I imagine it must be very difficult to have to be a quote-unquote relevant musician during these times and be a participant in the zeitgeist with so much horror going on and, for lack of a better word, you know, Black Death. Do you have any thoughts about just how you take on these very serious topics in your relentless quest in making the world a better place?
Well, I think we all do what we have the capacity to do, and no one has the responsibility of doing everything. So there might be times when certain artists have the capacity to depict the situation with, you know, greater or lesser forms of lucidity, because the trauma hasn't affected them in the way that it might have affected other artists. If, you know, like during that last year, within all the Black Lives Matter protests and the trauma that caused those, I was in a position where, we were in a position where our idea of it, of how we relate to it, could be depicted on record. So we did it. That doesn't mean that we'll be able to next year. You know, and I think if you've got the ability to depict your societal surroundings at any given point in time, you know, you've kind of got a duty to do that, because it can't be taken as a given. I act in generally intuitively. So it's not that I'll have an idea of what an artist should or shouldn't do. It's just, if you have the capacity to act with integrity, then you have a duty to do that. But you've also got to have that responsibility to yourself in terms of self-care, of knowing when the time of just reflection or not going into these subjects is, you know, when it's not appropriate to do that, because it is traumatic, and it is a process where we're seeing all of these horrors, and healing needs to happen. And sometimes it's about sharing as an artist, and sometimes it's actually about withdrawing and not giving the totality of your thoughts on any given subject.
Let the music do the healing. Here with Shabaka Hutchings and Black to the Future. We thank him so much for joining us and telling his story as usual. And we look forward to the next 10 years of Sons of Kemet.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Throughout the madness, stay strong. Sounds like incredible advice that we can all take heed. I think that's a message for all of us that Shabaka Hutchings has. It's also the name of the tune you just heard. And if you want to dive more into the recording, go to our website where you can read Shabaka Hutchings' full mission statement about the record. You can watch Jazz Night in America's concert film of them playing at the Big Ears Festival too. Again, subscribe at checkoutjazz.org. And if you are on iTunes, maybe you can give us a review while you're there. Of course, we're on social media too. At checkoutjazz is our handle. And you can find me at Simon Rettner on Instagram and Twitter. That's me, your host. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. Thanks for checking us out.